Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the one and only MTGN Quarantine Podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out before we begin to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to utilize this opportunity to give a huge shout-out and thank you to all the awesome people who've supported me over at patreon.com/mtgnquarantine. So, a huge shout-out and thank you to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Royal, Nick S., Infamous Fridge, Frugal Brutal, and Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/mtgnquarantine for more information. Today's episode of the podcast is going to be a little bit of a departure from the usual episodes that I have on here, but that doesn't mean it's not going to be exciting in its own brand new, brand spanking new way. So, I was kind of inspired by the episode I did a month or two back on how I try to build my EDH decks. I kind of went through my own process for figuring out and trying to explain to everybody how exactly my very chaotic brain works when it comes to brewing EDH decks. And I figured through that whole thing, you know, had some really good responses to that. A lot of people seemed to learn something from there. And it really got me thinking, you know, why don't I start asking other people how they approach deck building? Because, you know, we all kind of deck build in a vacuum in our own way, and sometimes we share things with others, sometimes we don't. And I really want to know how other people build their decks, because I know how I build mine, so it's just interesting to see how I differ, and I'm also kind of the same in some ways with other people. So we're going to try that thought here today, so without further ado, I'd like to introduce my guest, part of the Draw for Turn podcast, Astral Flame. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, MJ. How you doing tonight?
Doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing good. Day was a little long, but you know, started with a morning coffee, got to play a little MTG tonight, so no big complaints. Pretty good day overall, I'd say.
Sounds good, sounds good. So again, I just mentioned Draw for Turn. I know that this is the perfect time for you to plug your podcast. So what exactly is Draw for Turn and where can people find your work on the internet?
Absolutely. So Draw for Turn is a Commander-focused podcast, just kind of focusing on the ins and outs Commander, different things you could approach. We do the occasional top five picks of our favorite sets and just give a lay of what we feel could be interesting in the Commander format and how to approach it. Usually we're found on Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, and Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts as well, with live recordings on Twitch twice a month at twitch.tv/astralflame, where I'm usually streaming MTG Arena or Commander.
Sounds good, sounds good. Yeah. So, again, Astral, with the intro that I just gave here, is that I'm really curious to know how you build your own decks. I know that you're really partial to dragons specifically, but I'm just kind of curious to know how many of your decks are led by dragons and how many are led by, gasp, non-dragons.
Approximately 80% of my commander decks are helmed by a dragon. I know there will be the thought that, you know, dragons aren't the best commander. I'm very partial to the old form of commander in the name of Elder Dragon. Mm-hmm. And to me, that name sparked resonance. So I've always kind of gone where I can to just have a dragon at the helm, if it possible at all. But there are cases and times when there just doesn't exist the dragon yet.
Yeah, I mean, I'll call that some dedication right there. I'm trying to think about how many decks I've brewed with the dragon at the helm. Let's see, I did Scion of the Ur-Dragon for one game, kind of did the thing and then got bored of it. But, you know, it wasn't exactly what I was looking to do. I think for me personally, the dragon that really kind of sticks out is OG Palladium Ores, actually, that I brewed for a whiteboarder game with friends of the show, Coach J-Ro, Mono Whiteboard, a.k.a. Peter, and Tyler, the Almighty Brush Swag, where we base, if you haven't heard what we did there, if everyone out there listening, the four of us basically just brewed four whiteboardered only EDH decks, and then we battled them with each other. It was a great time, had a lot of fun, and played some really, really old niche cards, so, you know, definitely props for us to doing that. But yeah, It's dragons can be really fun to play, and because they do a lot of things. There's just so many of them too.
There is. That's kind of the nice basis. Like, no one dragon really is the same. I mean, outside of the non-legendaries, because there's a lot of dragons with fire breathing. But when you get into the legendary aspects of each of the dragons, especially when you differentiate what is considered a legendary dragon versus an elder dragon, each of their card mechanics really hits different, especially with their card synergies as well. You take a look at like the dragons from Tarkir and their pre-elder dragon stage. Each of those were very dragon focused on effect with attacks. When you look at the elder dragons, however, they're less focused on the dragons and more about their ETBs because they're taking the helm of their flight. If you take a look at something like Sion of the Ur-Dragon, it cares about dragons in the deck. But if you take a look at like Veivictus Osmite of the Dire in new printing, he's very big about putting permanents into play.
A lot of interesting things in dragon design over the last couple of years, but yeah, just big creatures with flying and doing the dragon thing. It seems like a pretty tried and tested strategy right there, doesn't it?
It does, and I mean, it's not a, well, there are dragons without flying, though rare, but it is a tried methodology, and in magic, what is magic without dragons? But the recent flavor of every dragon that's been coming out really sparks a new and different approach to what you can do with the decks, and sort of take a different style to really kind of, if you want to, bring it back to the days of an elder dragon helming it.
All right, so now that we've kind of talked about dragons a little bit, I want to dive into your building process. So let's just say there's a hypothetical dragon that really catches your fancy, right? And you're really excited to build around this. What is your first step, I guess? I mean, I'm not sure if I want to go step by step here or kind of just what is your process for building a commander deck, even if you don't necessarily have the cards in front of you, when you're just kind of using resources, just trying to build it in your head. Where do you start?
I will always start off by picking the commander, which you get established, you figure it out, and getting a feel for what I want to do with the commander. So if it's a dragon that cares about enchantments, I might look at Voltron. If it cares about permanents, maybe I'm thinking Primal Surge. If it's defenders and attacking, maybe I'm thinking a wall strategy. If I'm trampled and I need to deal combat damage to draw a card, I'm thinking combat damage. So I'll take a look at what the dragon can do and its effect and sort of think of a strategy I can relate with that and the strategy that might be the most interesting to do. Because some strategies are often tried and true. They will continually work. I mean, we all know the adverb of tokens go wide, drop a crater hoof, there's lethal. Or, X amount of mana, Torment the Hailfire, wipes the board, Great Merchant of Asphodel, or Thassa's Oracle type. But I'll try to look for a different approach on getting my lethal win in a sort of not flashy manner, but something that's memorable for good fun. For like in Belladross Witherbloom, when I was brewing that, I'm looking at Belladross and I'm thinking, okay, cool. I can minus 10 life and I can untap my mana. I can play some big spells. I see a lot of people that have played like lands based to Belladross. I see a lot of life gain based on it, just and funnel that into big spells. Maybe you're doing recursion. So like what I did was I took Belladross, I took the untap, I put in a Boaz's Citadel, and I used my complete life as a resource, using cards like Grim Feast, some creature destruction, small aristocrats package, and really played the tinker game of I'm strategically going to be paying 10 life each turn to untap my lands. And being able to force my opponents to have to answer whatever I play on their turns through instant speed effects. But sort of stemming from there, like I'll figure out what I want to do. That's step one. I'll make sure I'm curious, I'm interested in it. It's going to be something memorable because my big thing, Commander, is I want a game that everyone's going to remember and have a good time with. We all kind of maybe dislike the game where no one's having a good time or bad memories with Madden. Commander is such a social format. You want people to be there. You want people to have fun. Everyone's committing their time. So make it the best you can. So that's my biggest influence in getting that. When I kind of do that, I kind of jump into like a numbers strategy. I will look at the mana cost of my commander and what turn effectively I'd like to get them out to start doing my things. So that'll determine the amount of ramp I'll go in the deck, which will switch anywhere between like 8 to 16. depending on the, again, the CMC of the commander and how quick I want it out. And then I'll kind of work down a board from there. I'll go into draw. I'll figure out a removal package. I'll go into board clear. And then once I've finalized those sort of numbers in, I'll work with the rest of the cards to really finite the strategy. Usually setting aside 5 to 6 cards that might be in for the win condition or the big thing I want to do. Because complicated combos are fun and they make it interesting to try to get off, especially when you can get together like a 5-card interaction to really pull it in. But other times you need a bit of redundancy. So I might build in like a 3-card combo and then 2 other cards that can be redundancy components to fuel that combo to get it off. And then the rest are all synergistic stuff. You know, if it's a token-based strategy, I might do things like Estigas Chariot, because that's a fun new token copier that doesn't really see much commander play, but it's cool because it comes with cats. I could look at some interesting burst draw effects. I mean, we got Light Up the Stage in red. Really kind of go from there. So it's a half of a numbers game and half kind of thinking of an interesting strategy that everyone's going to want to remember.
Definitely, definitely. And it's interesting that you bring up Estigas Chariot, because that is a very good card. I have not had the opportunity to play with it yet, but it seems fun.
Cat Car is one of my favorite cards in Standard and Alchemy right now, and I've had to play in Commander because I can't imagine a deck without it now. Any deck with green, I have it in, because it comes with kitties. How can you not?
Yeah, nothing like having a chariot pulled by cats, right?
Exactly.
Nothing like a mystical game, you know, with chariots and creatures moving around. Yeah, that's fun stuff, honestly. Okay, so the next question that I have for you is the topic of pet cards. And again, I talk about this a lot on my channel, maybe not as much as I should, but again, there's kind of a divide depending on what you're looking at doing in a deck versus quote-unquote pet cards. And I'm just curious, what are your stances on pet cards, and what are some of your favorite pet cards to jam in some of your decks that may not necessarily be the quote-unquote best card, but you just can't bring yourself to cut?
Ooh, that's a good one. I think pet cards are fantastic, because like everyone's got a flavor of a card that really meshes with them and just kind of synergizes, and when you have it, you just want to play it and everything. I love the concept of it, because it's also something that like you kind of get known for. Like, you're always the player that does this thing with this card. Like, it's a trademark or a calling card in a way. And I think that speaks a bit about, like, symbolism and recognition. Because you've done something, people think it's cool, and they remember you. And that means it's a positive experience. So I think pet cards are super sweet, especially when people get to know you for it. Speaking on my part for pet cards, I don't ever really have, like, one pet card in general. People will always just say, oh, your pet card is literally every dragon because that's all you play. And I'm like, you're not wrong, but still, there are a few cards I like to jam in the decks when I can. In any sacrifice deck, I love Aetherworks Marvel. And in any deck that runs black, I love Bolas's Citadel. Just kind of paying 8 life for a dragon seems good to me when it's free. I will never complain about that. Probably one of the bigger things I get kind of known for, aside from dragons, is running counterspells that aren't blue. any opportunity I can run, like Tybalt's Trickery, Pyroblast, Blue Elemental Blast, Mana Teeth. I believe there is one in black, but I don't really delve into that one too much. Or my probably honest favorite is Mage's Contest. Just to really catch people off guard.
That's a classic right there.
I love it because it's like turn 3, opponents maybe, you know, played out a Soul Ring turn 1, Signet already, their 5-mana commander is about to come out, and they're like, game's going to start getting here. And I'm like, how would you like to bid today? So, and it catches people off guard because when you're in colors that aren't blue, they're never really thinking about other counterspells, especially in the form of like Mage's Contest. It's not one that people have kind of skirted about it, maybe heard about it, but don't ever see, and it doesn't often come to mind when you're thinking a potential removal spell. So that's probably is up there with Tybalt's Trickery for me.
Sure. So for everyone out there who has not heard of Mage's Contest, we're going all the way back to Invasion back in 2000. Mage's Contest, wow. is an instant for one red-red and reads you and target spell's controller bid life. You start the bidding with a high bid of 1. In turn order, each player may top the high bid. The bidding ends when the high bid stands. The highest bidder loses life equal to the high bid. If you win the bidding, counter that spell. God, I don't know how many times you could say bid in one sentence, but there you go.
A whole ton.
But yeah, it's a fun card. It's also on the list, it appears to be. So yeah, that's a big deal. But yeah, that's a really fun card. Chaotic card. Just seems like it's totally a red card.
Oh, 100%. And like sometimes like chaotic games are some of the best. Maybe Possibility Storm games aside, because okay, that can really get swingy. But aside from that, chaotic games really, really make it a blast. A friend of mine had this really interesting deck he put together. It's an entirely mono black deck, and he calls it Blackjack because there is 21 different legendary commanders that can be helmed by the deck, and each commander makes the deck play entirely different. And at the start of each game, he'll have someone at the table pick a number in a pile, and he'll flip cards over until he hits a legendary creature from the pile and the number that was chosen. So it's like 21 different ways to play the same deck really gets you interested in like how many different puzzles or different outcomes can this game kind of go. And it's always a blast to play against, and it kind of inspired me for a goblin deck I made. Mm-hmm. So it's a mono red goblin deck with 10 different legendary commanders that can be helmed. You can have things like the Krenko Mob Boss or Krenko Tin Street Kingpin. Purphoros is obviously there, but then you've got some really bad hitters like Tuck Tuck the Explorer and Sweet the Immortal. So hey, game can go great, or I could get a 1-3 Sweet.
Yeah, we don't talk smack about Squee around here.
Hey, man, Goblin Bombardment's in the list. Like, Squee does wonders.
Yeah. If people are out there potentially talking smack about Squee, I have some words for you. Don't. But, yeah, that sounds like a really interesting way. It's just making your deck very modal. I mean, obviously, we talk about the commander precons that come out every year, having two or three, or one face commander and two or three additional options, right? But to be able to build your own brew to then have that same modality, but really have it work, you know, that it really does work with all those commanders instead of some of them just kind of going off in a completely different direction or no direction in some cases. Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, it also, the nice thing with it too is between the memorable games and how your playstyle changes, you adapt with it too. You have to think of your interactions in a lot of different ways. So in piloting that same kind of deck, you're also challenging your playstyle, because I love dragons. My main archetype outside of dragons is usually an aristocrat package or sacrifice type of deck. That's my favorite thing to play. In between, and like, I'm a big Jund player. I love Jund and Modern and Standard and Alchemy. But like, if you take that away, I gotta think outside the box. Let me tell you the number of ways I've had to cast Squee from the command zone or exile. It really makes a difference when it's not a Krenko in your command zone.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of different kinds of play styles here, Astral, what would be, your favorite deck archetype to play versus in the usual, like, control, combo, combat, like, mill? What would you really say is, like, your first favorite? I mean, we've talked about the aristocrats here, but this kind of series, like, what is your favorite way to try to win a game?
It would definitely be a mix of combat and combo, 100%. I've tried control decks, and like I can pilot it okay. It's I don't find the interest in the control style. It's not my usual go-to. I very much thrive in a mid-range environment where I'm interacting and doing things and perpetually thinking ahead. Not to say that a control player doesn't think ahead, but the methodology of thinking ahead is very different between a mid-range player to a control player. Mid-range player is actively thinking what they have to do and what their opponent may have to work a play around. The control player is very much focused in, I am going to have the answers to get to my late game. And that's like their primary focus. But definitely combat and combo. If there's an interesting, even combining the two, funnily enough, I played in with the Prismari precon, and I upgraded it. So Galazeth Prismari, the Elder Dragon, was actually at the helm, made some changes to the deck, developed a board full of 4/4 elementals, cast his Surge to Victory, and I exiled Mind's Desire. So I went to combat and had a small little combo for suddenly getting a bunch of Mind's Desires to play free spells from the top of my deck after combat damage was dealt.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so moving on a little bit. So we've now talked about how you kind of really get started building your deck, right? You've seen what commander you want to work with. You figured out the strategy you want to go with, maybe some of the cards that are in there. Walk us through the rest of the process until you get to that specific deck. I mean, do you have a particular... I just did an episode talking about maybe having a template for building your deck. Just curious, do you have some kind of template do you stick to for different cards that have different jobs? You know, obviously we talked about mana, ramp, but, you know, we're talking single target removal, mass removal, lands, things like that. Or is it just kind of depends on the deck or just however you feel that particular day?
It's a bit of a mix. It depends on how I'm feeling in the day and what I'm looking the deck to do. I have a partial template that I usually keep defined for what is basically the ramp, the draw, the single target removal, and board clear. But, excuse me, the remaining cards in the deck for what I'm looking to do, what I want to accomplish, and the card choices included, that's very much dependent on the kind of feeling in the day and what I'm really looking to do. There are what I would say certain key staples, like, you know, if it's a token strategy, I'm obviously going to look for things that can develop tokens, but maybe I'm not looking for that $1,000 commander deck because money is hard to come by. And, we like an affordable format that people can play in. So budget brews are very pocket friendly. So I will put like forth a challenge. What is a budgetary option of something I can find that's not going to cost me $50 like a Bitter Blossom if I'm in black? Maybe I'm looking for things like Sedgemoor Witch. Cast a couple instants or sorceries, make a couple 1/1s on the board, and she's only like an $8 card versus a $50 card.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on what I'm going for, what I want the budget of the deck, those are probably the biggest influences into leading what I'm going to brew for that day. Because it very much depends, because there are decks I will absolutely say I have no problem funneling some money into, and there are others like I just kind of want to build it for the sake of building it, and I want to keep it at that. Because card quality choices can absolutely affect how a deck is going to function and push ahead. I mean, we probably all can agree, like, fast mana is a big accelerant, and if a deck has Mana Vault, Mana Crypt, and Soul Ring, and, you know, they're all in an opening hand, suddenly you're X amount of turns ahead of the game versus a deck that's maybe just reliant on a couple talismans, Worn Power Stone, Thrain Dynamo type of package. So I really play into all that effect. It depends on, budget, how I'm feeling for the day, and what I want to do, and the speed at which I want to accomplish things.
For sure. So now that you've basically figured all of those important things out, and you've put the deck together, then it's time to play, right?
Absolutely.
Are you the kind of person who immediately just jumps into a game with that deck, just try it out a few times, see how it works? Or are you more in the gold fishing mode, where you are interested in, you know, doing practice hands or going on one of the very many deck building websites and utilizing features that allow you to goldfish the deck, and then you try to make changes before you play? I'm just curious to know, or is it maybe some of both?
So it is very much a mix of both, but it's more of a 70-30. I do about 30% goldfishing, so I'll finish a brew, I'll deduct the 15 extra cards I've probably put into the deck and don't need, because that's the problem with our format. We love every card, but we can't fit every card in our deck. It makes us cry when we need to cut down size. But I will do a series of gold fishing just for a couple hands, see how does the land count feel, how does the mulligan look, what's my percentile chance to draw an opening ramp piece. And if I'm kind of satisfied with that, with like 3 or 4 different hand draws, and I think like, hey, this is playable, I could do this, I can work with it, I have some turn 2 to turn 4 type of play, then I'd actually just go jump in right and go to play a game. I generally just kind of like goldfish for comfort feeling, and then I'll jump in right to try and play, because the best way you can tell if a deck's going to work is if you're going to play against it with 3 other people at a table, and if it's going to work, it's going to work. And if it's not, you're going to find out real fast.
Definitely, definitely. So I think as we're going to wrap up here, I'm going to ask you a question. What is your favorite deck from like the last year or two? And then the second part of that question is, what is a deck that you're working on right now or that you just completed that you're really excited and you want to talk about for a minute or two?
Ooh, so my favorite deck to date is probably a Korvold deck. And I know people's viewpoint on Korvold because a lot of people play it the same. I will preface that Korvold is a food chain deck, but not in the traditional sense. I took Korvold and did an Eldrazi spawn / Scion package with treasures to pump out big mana so I can play some of the Eldrazi Titans on like turn 5 or 6. I included in a sub theme of aristocrats and then a Boas of Citadel so I can play an Embercool for like 13 life if my graveyard's empty. Mm-hmm. And kind of put it in that way. So it's a toolboxy Jund deck with big Eldrazi, and that's been my favorite pet deck to play. Kind of just a bunch of really fun good cards that I mesh together and look really nice. In terms of deck I'm just finishing, it's gonna be Turgrid. I see a lot of people sort of voicing issues with Turgrid, which I can understand. And I know that's a whole other thing to go on to with how people feel about the card. But I wanted to brew a Turgrid deck, and why I'm excited for this Turgrid deck is I think it's a great chance to try to promote Rule Zero discussion with new playgroups and new people to jam with. Because there's tons of different ways to brew a commander deck, and like the way I styled my Turgrid deck is it's actually Turgrid Demons. My win condition is Liliana's Contract. So I'm using Turgrid as sort of the God of Fright with the demons in the background, and Liliana's Contract as the win condition. So Turgrid is guiding the ways through the frightful nightmares of demons to lead you to Liliana's Contract for victory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely turning the commander on its head right there. I did a very good episode a few months back with Lenny Woolley talking about trying to figure out the loudness of commanders and trying to figure out how we can try to bring the scare factor down, you know, no pun intended there, or maybe it is intended, I don't know. About trying to see how we can take these commanders that are very popular, very powerful, and try to crank the power down a little bit, or at least, you know, the things that people are afraid of seeing in there, and just trying different lines to victory, utilizing those commanders. And he's done a lot of great work over at EDH Rec. I have my very popular, very infamous Najeela build that falls under the same category. And it's just really fun, in my opinion, to take a commander that's just bustedly powerful and try to figure out a new and funky way to just make it kind of more casual, I guess. Maybe that's a good way. Maybe it's not a good way to say it. I don't know. It's up to you. But just try to bring some of that scare factor down and, you know, just make it a bit more acceptable to a lot more players and just see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I'd even stem a little sidebar on that, too. Not even just making it more acceptable, but you're showing the commander's not the big bad. You're making a really fun environment to show, like, hey, you can play with this commander and it's going to be okay. You're going to have good times. It's not something to be frightened or scared. And, you know, maybe you might encourage someone to approach building their own version of that commander deck in their own way. Like, we have some 16, 17, 18,000 worth of cards in MTG. There is near infinitum ways to brew a deck of just 100 if you look at the exponential ways of how it can be done. And there's no one set way that a commander is going to be built or created or in. Some lead themselves to be built certain ways because of their effects. That doesn't mean you need to lead into that. You could always figure out other ways to work with it. Perspective is a big thing on commanders.
Oh, yes. I basically make my living as a content creator trying to come up with bizarre ways to build, in some cases, very popular commanders. I talk about this a lot of times on my podcast. So if people are interested in checking those episodes out, a lot of those comments are kind of sprinkled throughout the podcast. So definitely take a look at those if you're interested in learning more about some of the things I've personally done to utilize kind of random themes or even things that don't show up on the EDH Rec page. And, you know, just try different things and make a narrative. I think ultimately that's, you mentioned that earlier there, Astral. We're trying to have fun here in this game. And if you're able to come to a table with a Turgrid deck that's Demon Tribal, you know, that's going to turn heads. People are going to remember that one time that, hey, did you see that game where the player had a Turgrid deck that wasn't doing typical Turgrid things? They're probably not going to remember the other five that they played against another, a regular standard run-of-the-mill Turgrid deck or Corval deck or any of the powerful commanders, but they're going to remember yours. And I think that right there is really what we get out of this when we kind of just change the expectations and we look and see what else we can build.
Absolutely agreed. Absolutely.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so much, Astral, for taking the time to be on the podcast here today. It's been great having you.
It's been an absolute pleasure being on here, MJ. I thank you for the invite.
Yeah, no problem. And again, if people are interested in finding you on Draw for Turn, where can they find your content again?
So you can find me on Twitch, Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram at Astros Flame, and then Twitter at Draw for Turn, as well as youtube.com/Draw for Turn. You know, weekly discussion topics usually going on our Twitter. We have our podcast episodes twice a month on Monday nights. So drop a follow, just get in on the action. We're always looking to jam some games and get some new perspectives in for Commander.
Definitely, definitely. And if you're interested in hearing any of the back catalog of the MTG and Quarantine podcast, you can also find that on the usual podcast outlets. That is the Google, Apple, Spotify, Player FM, RocketCast, PocketCast, MTG, CastCat, let's see, Stitcher, CastBox, Breaker, Overcast. There's just so many, I always forget what they're called. But, you know, if it's a major podcast outlet, odds are I'm on there. So go check those episodes out. You can also find me on the Twitterverse at MTG in Quarantine. If you find the happy-looking Omog wearing a pair of headphones, you've found the right place. And I'd like to utilize this opportunity again to give a huge shout-out and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine. So another shout-out and thank you to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Royal, Nick S., Infamous Fridge, Frugal Brutal, and Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/mtginquarantine for more information. And I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.